America. Today is Tuesday, April 19, 2005, and this is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. And I don't know why this seems like this is church today, because y'all are all sitting on the back row. We will invite you up in the front pews. We're pleased you're here. Our purpose in this meeting is to secure the future for those who secured ours in a totally nonpartisan matter or method, in that our total purpose is for our veterans and our military and their families. At this time, I'd like to ask all those who have served in our fight for freedom to stand and for Kevin to raise his hand.
You're here.
We're totally grateful for your service and your commitment to freedom and to America that gives us the right to sit here today and talk freely. This morning, we want to just briefly say to those in Roseburg and White City and Ashland and Jacksonville and to the Oregon National Guard how grateful we are. They let us hitchhike on a training mission this weekend, and it was just simply wonderful to get to see those excellent medical facilities, to see that our current military are getting a top priority at those facilities as relates to health issues. And wow, once again, just like our Guard, those facilities were meticulous, professionally run, you know, the top of the nation. And we are very, very fortunate to have those facilities. Also, it was wonderful in that we had troops in for drill and training, and in fact, our last meeting was almost totally the military, and it was, you know, total room filled. It was just awesome, and what wonderful people, and all expressed great appreciation, committee members, for y'all being there, and I have letters that I will be sending your way. We look forward to our other trips on the other side of the mountain, to the northeast and to Bend, and to continue to be at the various town halls the senators and representatives are conducting. One this Saturday from 10 to 12 in Representative Farr's district in Eugene. So, but and Representative Barnhart's district too, I guess. So we look forward to seeing our veterans and talking with our military. Most important was one individual. I won't call his name, but he was had served substantially in Vietnam, and he said, you know, I came to this meeting just because, you know, we just keep hearing that, you know, maybe something good is going to happen, and my gosh, I am so impressed with what's being done in the legislature. It really is happening. So I said, if we could be just a little bit of the excellence in action that the Guard and the Reserves and our veterans have displayed, well, we will have done a good job for our veterans. Also this morning, I just wanted to say how very, very proud I am of our three members who were just named to get Bronze Stars today for heroic rescue. And we look forward to having them join us, and certainly want to have a ceremony in the house and recognize their heroic efforts in saving lives in a particular incident over in Iraq. And my goodness, makes you proud. On a sad note, I will mention once again, as Representative Krupp did, that Thursday will be the services for our most recent hero who sacrificed it all for us, and those who need to know more about that funeral service can sure contact us. But we sure send our love and appreciation and respect to his family. All right. doctor, we found this out on our trip, Dr. Stembridge, would you please tell us what all this paperwork is?
I put a stack of paper, and this happens when committee members ask for more information, and it's going to be delivered later, and this is some of the information that's been delivered later. The first comes through Representative Boquist, discussion on the soldier that was mentioned in Portland, and this is information that the military department has provided. We have information from the Department of Veterans Affairs on the number of homeless veterans by state that was submitted by Jennifer Vigna. We have a message from Ronald Estep, who is discussing Eastern Oregon. Sorry that we are not, we had only one meeting scheduled on that side of the mountains, and I wrote back to him and told him that we had a plan for further meetings and we've been delayed. We have information from the Director of Veterans Affairs on an editorial on the Oregon Veterans Home in the Dalles. And we have, remember the day we had the testimony on the memorials, we had some very moving testimony from Mark Luca. And I asked him to submit written, and he has done that. That's also what you have. Okay. Things that I did not distribute, but I can get them to you, has to do with a question that was asked of the National Conference of State Legislatures on Veterans Affairs. I can get this information to members if they want it. The questions, or the answers have to do with other states have current statutes that require public or private entities to maintain health care coverage for family members of deployed National Guard and reservists. How many states offer state-supported education benefits, and what are the amounts and levels of those benefits? This is a little package that I can make copies of if members would like.
Excuse me, we would like it, I imagine. Would you like it?
Okay, we'll see what we can do on that. And then two messages regarding our trip this weekend. One from Bill Snell in Ashland. He says, please convey to committee our thanks for the program last Saturday here in Ashland. It's truly an outstanding program. I do believe it all will be approved. And he says, always at your service. And then we have a message from Fred Smith, who is the president at Klamath Community College.
I must explain that what happened at that moment as we were headed to Klamath is that our helicopter got weathered out and couldn't get in, so we had to then forfeit our trip on those last miles to Klamath, and our good administrator, you know, had procured us a rental van, and we drove like heck all the way back, so we could be back for Representative Boquist's anniversary and my auction for the bid for kids for the Kiwanis. Does that explain it all?
President Smith said we had about 30 individuals who arrived at the college for the event. I think we would have had a greater turnout, but a number of folks heard of the postponement and did not enter the college. This was scheduled for 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon. I'll see Representative Nelson on Wednesday to reschedule. The veterans were disappointed, but I think the base folks were most upset because they really wanted to show the group the base and tell about its mission. It says the weather in Klamath Falls is always a crapshoot. If you're not sure about driving in the snow, you made a good choice. And then he says, like my dad always said, you would never forgive yourself if you died doing something dumb.
Oh, does that mean we should have gone on?
he says, we will reschedule the event and have time to do it right, not in a rushed manner.
Okay, well, to that great college president, Fred Smith, down there, who is oversees one of the three community colleges that we love because they have offered free tuition to our veterans, our military. Appreciate the letter, but we'll be there, and we're sorry that the weather caused us a little problem.
And in fact, I'd like to publicly thank Representative Greg Smith because he was down in the air and he actually went over and talked to them briefly on our behalf to let them know what was going on. So he took the brunt.
Okay. Well, I can't think of a better person. And I know Representative Girard was down there, and Ways and Means Committee was down there, and Rules and Elections, Representative Farr was also with them. So the people should know that we're doing our best to get everywhere for them. Thank you for this good information, Dr. Stimley. Is that it?
That's all at this time.
Okay. Our very first item that we want to address today is House Joint Resolution 34. House Joint Resolution 34. And then we have the good head of our State Parks and Recreation here, but we've been asked to just get that bill moved on. And so I'm going to open a work session and hope all of y'all can just bear with me for taking things out of order. But this seems to be most critical this morning, so we can get moving down onto Ways and Means. So I'm going to open a work session on House Joint Resolution 34.
Madam Chair, House Joint Resolution 34 has a subsequent referral to revenue.
You heard
it on the 31st of March. And it would change the Constitution through a referral. Upon approval by voters at the November 2006 general election, amends the Oregon Constitution to include the provision of services to Oregon veterans among the uses of proceeds from the Oregon State Lottery. It requires 1.5% of net state lottery proceeds to be deposited in a veterans benefit fund for the purpose of funding county veterans service officers, rehabilitation of injured soldiers, scholarships for Oregon veterans. It reduces from 15% to 13.5% the portion of net state lottery proceeds to be deposited in the Parks and Natural Resources Fund. You have the -5 amendment, which we have distributed. I have copies to put out also. This revises the language on uses of funding for veterans benefits, and it changes the election to the May primary. In addition to that, Representative Nelson, Representative Boquist has handed me the -2 amendment on this, and I will make copies and have that distributed as well.
Thank you. Committee, we will sit at ease.
If
you will, please. So give you an opportunity to get all those amendments in your proper location at the same time. I hope. In time for Vice Chair Barnhart to arrive, too. Oh, hello. We're at ease, so we're getting ready to hear House Joint Resolution 34. Excuse me for spreading out like this.
I might mention, Madam Chair, while you're looking at these as to the election, what we heard from the Secretary of State on another House joint resolution was that there are basically three options that you have. One is to go with the general election, which is in the even-numbered year, November. Another option is to go with the primary election, which has been held in May in the even-numbered year. And the third choice is to have a special election. And you can choose any day you want on that. There was quite a price tag on that.
What was the price tag on a special?
It's over $1,200,000, something like that. Yeah, that's fine. Are we still on the recorder, Aaron? Or Yeah, we're going, so we're okay.
Okay. Okay, we'll now resume. Representative Boquist, would you like to explain the Dash 2 amendments? I hope everybody has theirs in front of them at this time.
Yes, Madam Chair. The Dash 2 amendment would make changes on page number 3. And say, if you look on page number 3, lines 40, 41, and 42, you'll see the areas where it was indicated 50-50. And the intent of the Dash 2 amendment is to ensure that those funds that are currently going to salmon restoration, watershed development, water quality remain the same, that we not cut the or not shift the environmental issues from one side to the other.
And that's lines,
lines 40 on page 4, if you look at lines 40 and lines 42.
40 and 42.
And you'll see.
I don't have
page 3.
Page
4.
Page 3.
Page 3.
I stand corrected.
Okay.
But on page 3, you'll see on line 40. If you go across where it says 50%, and it changes it to 44%.
Okay.
And the below line, which is line 42, it changes it to 56%. And the net effect, if you'll look...
So the second 50 is 56%?
Right. And if you look at the net effect of shall be distributed for purposes of financing restoration of salmonoid populations, watersheds, fish and wildlife habitats, and water quality in Oregon, so that we ensure that we continue to help the local communities and the local entities that are working on salmon restoration, watershed enhancement, for example, the Yamhill Basin folks and things like that across the state. And that's the intent of that. And again, I think the bottom line is, as with this amendment and the others, and a lot of these joint resolutions are going to go to revenue, and then we'll see what the next step is beyond there.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion, Representative Hunt?
Let me just make sure. Is the intent to have the 1.5% that would be taken off the top come just out of the park share, basically the salmon share whole?
Hmm. At this point, the portion would come out of the parks portion. And then it would maintain the same level of funding. And I distributed to members of the committee before the actual dollar amounts of those, just to give you a fairly substantial idea. Amounts. If you look at, no matter what happens with House Joint Resolution 34, even if it were passed by the people, it would not take effect until 07. So what you're going to see is in 05-07 that parks and the parks will receive $70 million out of that, estimated out of that lottery fund, which is a 21% increase over the present biennium. SAM and watershed, so on and so forth, receive $70 million. And then in 07-09, then the share would actually, in salmon, would maintain the same going up, and then the share of 07-09 for parks would be the same that it received in 03-05.
Representative Boquist, since you are absolutely keenly efficient, it appears to me you have a graph there that maybe we all should have a copy of.
Yes, Madam Chair, and it was distributed once before. I'd be happy to.
I don't have it either.
Actually, I sent it to each individual committee member. So.
Oh, heaven forbid that you sent anything in the mail.
No, Madam, it was hand delivered, but I'm
okay,
sure it's.
We ask to get a copy. That will probably, Representative Hunt, help us understand this better.
Right, yeah.
If you don't mind. Sorry for the audience.
And simultaneous to that, ma'am, I mean, I'm not sure where Amendment 5 came from. I think that was a correlation of what we had.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
This question is
far.
Whatever your name is. Representative Boquist, did you make a reference when you sent that to us as to being part of HJR 34? You did.
Yes, I did, and it's on the
so screen. Then we can blame our staffs for not placing it in the folder.
Or we can blame our staffs for not getting through those 13 feet of mail.
Well, head to a roll in my office. because it does say the 34 on the top, and it should have been put in the folder, and it wasn't.
I agree.
Well, you know what? Maybe it didn't get there. Just always remember that. That's what I like to tell the IRS. I didn't get it.
And Representative Barnhart, just for the record, if I go back in the note telling
you, oh, here she is.
Sitting there. Well, this is a different. This is the copy of the original one.
Oh,
this
okay.
is a different one. But her had a role, too.
I'm just telling
that,
you.
And after that, Representative Madam Chair, I probably won't find a file for a week.
That's right. I must admonish you, too, and explain to you that there is no provisioning in the Constitution for head rolling. So until you pass such legislation, I'm going to have to ask you to refrain from that. Okay, we're at ease for a moment, please. This is extremely important. Thank you so much, Aaron.
The bad one, the moving target.
Well, I see the problem, Representative Boquist.
What's that?
HJR 34 Veterans Referral Amended, that should have been involved.
Okay, it's your fault.
Yeah, all right.
Not
we,
really.
We've solved that.
And a bigger font. That's right. For us who have need glasses. Okay, all right. Now, committee members, back to business. Are there any questions here you need to ask Representative Boquist about the dollars? Does this make sense to everyone?
Yeah.
Okay, last chance. Okay, Representative Kong.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Boquist, so how much money, and I'm sure it's here, but how much money will the Veterans Fund then get? Is it the 14.5?
Mm-hmm.
Down here? I mean, how much money...
Yes. Presently, according to the present revenue forecast
right.
that came out in March, it would be $14.5 million during the 2007-2009 biennium. And I believe, I really believe further to that discussion that what will transpire is once it goes to revenue and they start balancing these sorts of things, I think that number is going to change. The percentages may change. And as
they'll
you well
probably
know,
double it.
No, Madam Chair, I think we'll be going the other direction. But
yeah.
I think the multiple House joint revenue. That's presently the base forecast.
A follow-up, Madam Chair. Did we calculate, because the purpose of this was for the County Veterans Service Officers, rehabilitation of injured soldiers and scholarships. Did we ever determine how much money do we need to fund for the county service officers? I mean, have we broken that out?
Yes, we have. Well, the issue, let me have a good director of our veterans here in the state come forward. Director Willis, with our trip this weekend, what we found, you know, we know there's tremendous pressure on our county officers.
Right.
And just in visiting with them where we were this weekend, we found that one person in some areas is certainly not enough. When you consider that each one of them could have a workload of as many as 40,000 based on 370,000 veterans at four to a family. So I just use that generally.
Right.
So we have not specifically, as I understand yet, assessed every county with our update with our current military and assess the workload, have we yet, of each one of them?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. The last veteran population figures we are working with do not include these recently returned veterans from the wartime theater of operation in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that number, obviously, we know as a minimum could be over 4,000. And those, of course, have a direct impact on the service officers employed by the state of Oregon, the national service officers that are employed by the veterans organizations, and certainly the county service officers. So they will all be impacted by these returning members and their families.
So if we again use four for a family, then we're talking about another $16,000. So we have not fully assessed that. What we did originally set, because we do not specifically know that yet, was that we needed 50 individuals. This is what we used originally. 50 service officers, or whatever we may call them. Some of them split up among different areas, at $50,000 each. So that was our original $2.5 million. So for a biennium, of course, then that would be $5 million. So that's the basis we started with.
So 50 service officers at how much?
At $50,000 apiece. Which the county financial officers told us was adequate. What that does not include, however, is in our meetings monthly with these individuals and all of our groups, we found that we do not have a network, computer-wise and wide, with all of our data that we have in it regard that we need to have in it regarding all the benefits of all the services. So there is a need, which we did not have originally in our budget, for that type of software and a program. So we're all connected. As veterans move from county to county, you know, their information can move with them. But to understand just the federal a bureaucratic maze of how they treat different branches of the service and benefits for different wars. For example, the home loan program we know is a big one. You know, we do certain things up to through 1976, and then after, you know, 1977 on, we change to another program. So hopefully we'll get that changed in Washington, D.C., but right now we need some type of program that, you know, will also benefit them, or we probably need twice as many if we don't do that.
Yeah.
Representative Kahn.
Just to follow up, Madam Chair, then, to my understanding, because we had three identified areas that we wanted additional funding for, that basically this proposal as currently presented would really only support helping our service officers and really wouldn't get to the rehabilitation or scholarships.
Well, no, excuse me. The basic program we talked about of funding for the basic service for our county service officers is we have budgeted for that.
Okay.
But for the extra services, like I'm talking about, like the technology to tie the groups together, heaven forbid we should have another conflict here.
Okay.
We don't have that in there.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm reading the limitations on page 4 at the top, lines 6 through 10. And I'm wondering if these ancillary services, like the computer system that you're talking about, would be covered under those limitations.
And yes, it is in 6, but it's not. We did not have it in our other budget, the $5 million.
Well, I don't mean the amount. I mean the allowance, the authorization. I think the language here, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, so I don't know, but the language here is fairly restrictive.
Yes.
It doesn't allow for ancillary services, like a computer service. At least it doesn't obviously allow for that. And I wonder if this would allow us to spend money that way.
It's my understanding that it would.
Okay.
From council, you know, because these are the services they're providing. It's the communication, you know, that allows them to provide these services. They can't do it without knowing all of the benefits, the time periods.
We're paying for services
provided
by. Okay.
Yeah, we're not hiring.
So the services could include maintaining a computer database.
Right.
I got
right.
you. Thank you.
This is not providing for the FTEs.
And, Madam Chair, those were issues that we discussed in a previous meeting. I think that's where Amendment 5 came from.
Okay.
Oh, the putting it on the ballot in the primary.
Now, if you go to if we could briefly just look at dash 5, so you have them.
Yeah.
You would just what do you say? Be at ease, Director Willis.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm familiar with that command.
Okay. Page four, if you've got dash five here, it says on page four, line two, after 11, insert A.
Oh, I see.
And then it includes services provided by veteran service officers in Oregon, rehabilitation services, other services provided by the Oregon Military Department to Oregon National Guard and active reserve personnel injured in a wartime theater of operations, educational assistance for Oregon veterans, and assistance and services for the spouses, children, and dependents of Oregon veterans. And the Office of the Director of Veterans Affairs may not expend more than 3% of the monies allocated to the office each biennium for the administrative expense, or overhead as I call it, the expenses of providing the services authorized by this first paragraph A. Okay? And then we delete 15 through 17. And change the date. The amendment proposed by this resolution shall be submitted to the people for their approval or rejection. We should just leave approval. Scratch or rejection. At a special election held throughout the state on the same date as the next primary election, which will be May 2006, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Any further discussion or questions?
Yeah.
Representative Barnhart, yes, what?
May I ask you a question, Mr. Willis?
Yes, please.
Thank you. This computer system we've been talking about, does that come under the 3% for administration?
No. Chair Nelson and Representative Barnhart, no, sir. Comes under services.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you thought you'd catch him. He's right. Too sharp for that.
I'm just getting it on the record because I think you could interpret it that way.
Okay.
I don't think that the 3%
please don't make
covered.
Me be more no. specific. I've had a hard enough time already on this measure. All right. Any other questions? Okay, we can move forward. All right.
Whichever you want. Madam Chair, I think that the two amendments that you have do not conflict in any way, so you could choose none of them, either of them, or both of them.
Okay. Representative Boquist?
Yes, Madam Chair. And we discussed, I believe, at the previous committee, in Amendment 1, and I'm not sure did we...
That's dealt with in 5.
That's dealt with in 5.
Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair, the history of these amendments, if you'd like me to go into it.
I really wouldn't. Go ahead, please.
Dash 1 revises the language on uses of funds for veterans' benefits. That was from Representative Boquist. The dash 3 also revised the language on uses of funding for veterans' benefits. And the dash 5 includes is revisions of the dash 3 and the dash 1.
What happened to dash 4?
Dash 4, I think, was an attempt to on a statement on the elderly and physically disabled, which is also, that language is also included in the dash 5s. But the dash 4s, I don't think the Legislative Council completed work on the dash 4s because we asked that it be put in the dash 5s.
Because I had used it improper terms. I should have said spouses, children, and dependents of Oregon veterans when I was trying to get the seniors and disabled included. I didn't want a widow with a dependent adult child who is disabled to not benefit from this in some way should they need help.
And you actually had a dash 6 also, which simply changed the election from November to May. That is also included in the dash 5.
I would say we've amended this measure about as much as anybody should ever want to.
Still in the single digits on amendments.
Well, that's true.
We're doing fine.
Okay, thank you. Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, if we're at a work session, I would like to move the dash 5 amendment to the House Joint Resolution 34.
Representative Boquist has moved the dash 5 amendment to the House Joint Resolution 34. Is there any discussion? Any questions?
Just ask if there's any objection.
Is there any objection? If not, we'll approve House Joint Resolution 34-5 amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the dash 2 amendment to the dash 2 amendment to House Joint Resolution 34 to House Joint Resolution 34.
Representative Boquist moves the dash 2 amendment to the House Joint Resolution 34. Discussion, Representative Hunt.
I would just really like to commend Representative Boquist. I mean, this is a very original bill, as I think I said at the time of the hearing, was an effort to actually find some new money to increase the size of the pool, which I think is great. But also this amendment, I think, is just really a thoughtful approach that keeps the salmon watershed pieces whole. And especially as I look at your parks numbers, it's important to remember that 10 years ago that number was zero coming out of the lottery.
That's right.
And so the fact that we'll be at $58 million in the 07-09 biennium is still something that we can all feel really good about at the same time that we're providing resources for veterans. So very thoughtful approach. Thank you.
And I certainly want to commend you, Representative Boquist. Okay, is there any objection? If not, we'll adopt the dash 2 amendment to House Joint Resolution 34. Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Resolution 34 as amended to the floor with a due adopt.
Did you go to the Revenue Committee first?
Oh, I'm sorry. With a due adopt recommendation, but with the referral to the Revenue first. You can rephrase that.
Thank you. Vice Chair Barnhart has moved House Joint Resolution 34, inclusive with the dash 2 and dash 5 amendments to the Revenue Committee. Is there any discussion? Any questions? We call the roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Grimes.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative
Cobb.
Aye. Chair
Nelson. Aye. Well, it's a great day in the state of Oregon for our veterans and our military. And committee members, I just want to thank you on their behalf. And Director Willis, let's go forth and let's win this war for our veterans and our military like they have won so many for us. And we're grateful for your support and that of the Oregon Guard and all the veterans who have worked hard on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. I'll close the work session on House Joint Resolution 34. Thank you. Okay, at this time, I would like for us to address House Bill 2425. And I'll call up State Parks and Recreation Director Tim Wood.
2425.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2425 also has a subsequent referral to revenue. It allows disabled veterans and active military personnel free use of state parks with and campsites. It limits the free use of overnight facilities to 5 consecutive days. You have dash 1 amendments that come from the committee. Dash 1 amendment limits the benefit to veterans with service-connected disabilities. It limits the free use of campsites to no more than 5 consecutive days and no more than 10 days per month. It eliminates free use of other overnight facilities such as yurts and cabins. You each have copies of the dash 1. I have extras, so let's do this here.
Thank you, Dr. Stembridge. Welcome. Mr. Wood, what say ye?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Tim Wood. I'm the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and we have worked with you all in drafting of these amendments, and we have no objection to House Bill 2425.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate that very much. Is there any discussion or questions? Representative Boquist.
No, I'm ready to make a motion, Madam Chair.
Any questions? Okay, Representative Boquist.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2425.
Representative Boquist has moved the dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2425. Is there any discussion or questions? Is there any objection? If not, the dash 1 is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2425 as amended with a due pass recommendation and referral to revenue.
Thank you. Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2425, inclusive of the dash 1 amendment, to the Revenue Committee. Is there any discussion or questions? Please call the roll, Aaron.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Brewer.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Kong?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Nelson?
Aye. House Bill 2425 with dash one amendment is adopted, and thank you very much, Mr. Wood. We're grateful.
Thank you.
Okay. We will now open a work session on House Bill 2602.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2602, you heard on the 22nd of March, it creates a military emergency financial relief program within the Oregon Military Department by hardship grants not to exceed $2,000 per pound to deployed Oregon National Guard soldiers. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund of the program, declares an emergency, takes effect July 1st, 2005. You have two amendments on this one. The dash three changes relief to assistance throughout. It deletes the requirement that a National Guard member serve more than 30 days to be eligible. It deletes the $2,000 limit. It expands eligibility to immediate family members, meaning spouse and children. It includes loans. It changes rule to regulation within the military department. And it sets an appropriation amount at $1 million. The Dash 4 amendment includes all of the Dash 3 provisions, but in addition, it includes the Oregon Military Emergency Financial Assistance Fund within the Charitable Checkoff Program, making that program eligible for contributions from taxpayers who wish to contribute a portion of their income tax refunds.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll call Chairman Caldwell. Welcome, Colonel Caldwell, and thank you for your commitment to our military.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here today. For the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Oregon Military Department. Okay, there we go. I'm just reading the dash threes and dash fours, as we said.
If you just say they're good, we can move on.
Madam Chair, the I scanning them quickly, I would say they're excellent. I would just comment for the committee's edification, I guess, that there's a Senate Bill 8 that is similar to this. This is a better version of it, because of the changes that are being made. And I think that as you work with your colleagues on the other side of the building, perhaps there's maybe get them to adopt this or let theirs go or something. There's the Senate Bill 8 was recommended to the Revenue Committee, I believe, and was it's sitting there now, I assume, or Ways and Means, I'm sorry. Went to Ways and Means, so, and I suspect that's where this one will go, so perhaps that's where, I'm not all that certain how the mechanics of this stuff work, but if that's where it was, that's fine. But looking at this, I think it's quite adequate, and it will inculcate into the ORS our present practice with some, I think, some better guidelines, frankly, and the checkoff is an absolute great benefit. That would be an excellent piece. So with that, I'll let you on to your business.
Could you just stay at ease?
Yes, ma'am.
I can't believe I've never told a colonel to do that. Well, wait. Maybe I have. And I just don't know it. Mr. McDonald, do you wish to testify, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. The only thing on this bill that we see that we want to point out that Oregon reservists have the same problems as the military Oregon Guard does, and I don't see any reserves in this bill whatsoever. And having the same problems, whether you're a reserve or whether you're on the National Guard, if you're on active duty, I'd like to see the Oregon members of the reserve component of the United States Armed Forces from the state of Oregon be included.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Any questions? Of either? Okay. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2602? Committee, Representative Hunt.
Just actually two quick questions for Colonel Caldwell, if I might, Madam Chair. I noticed that at least two of the changes that pop out are the removal of the cap per grant that may be made. Was that at your suggestion? I guess it seems reasonable to me that there might be some cap. Maybe $2,000 is not a reasonable cap, but was that at your request, or is there a specific reason why the cap was removed, or what's your view on the cap? Maybe it's a better question.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, no, I didn't. I don't think I recommended that the cap be removed. However, and it probably came out of a discussion I believe we had reference. Sometimes we put numbers in statutes, and then suddenly 10, 15 years later, they're, and we've seen this in this committee, I think, where you've gotten some legislation that was passed in the 50s and 60s that were designed to help veterans, but now the number's so outdated, it's never been fixed. So I think that would be my answer to that question. I don't know that I specifically asked that, but I think it's reasonable to assume that that we can do that in regulation. Currently, we have a relief fund that's operated by a private 501c3 that we established, and we did put a $1,000 cap on that in our regulations, but we also allowed a way to under certain circumstances that $1,000 could be, could be larger. We've had situations where we've basically loaned far more than $1,000. But we do that when pay gets messed up, and we know the individual's going to get paid back, so we'll get the money back. So we've loaned up to $4,000 and $5,000 on occasions for 30, 60 days because of pay problems and to keep a family whole and knowing that we would get it back. So caps have a tendency to limit your flexibility, and I think that I would recommend that you leave it that way and look at the regulations. And if you're dissatisfied after you see the regulations or hear something about it, then maybe that's a conversation we could have about reestablishing caps.
Okay, any other questions? Committee, I want to address Mr. McDonald's issue and explain a challenge we have, not that it can't be overcome, but at this time, to administer out of the Oregon Military Department the reserves program leaves us unconnected. We do not at this time have a system whereby we can do that. But what we'd like to do is, if possible, go ahead and pass this bill, but we are going to be working with our generals to see what we can put in place before this session ends to see that we could adopt an emergency bill that would include the reserves. But to say we're going to do it when we don't even have a system by which we can do it does not serve us well, but we certainly want to include them, and we appreciate Mr. McDonald continuing to remind us.
Madam Chair, I could solve that by just having them all join the National Guard.
Well, I started to say maybe we recommend that.
For a minute, I thought you were going to volunteer for the Marines.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd call it that. If they wanted to have a good recruiting program, they could solve that.
That's right. Okay. Representative Clark, can you help me move this bill, please?
Yep, I will. Madam Chair, I move that we accept the -4 amendments to House Bill 2602.
Vice Chair Farr has moved the -4 amendments to House Bill 2602. Is there any discussion? Are there any questions? Is there any objection? If not, the -4 is adopted. Representative Farr.
Representative Farr is asking if we have any other amendments. -3 is included in the -4.
All right. Okay. Madam Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2602 with amendments to Ways and Means. with a do pass.
Vice Chair Farr has moved House Bill 2602 as amended by the -4 amendment to the Ways and Means Committee with a do pass recommendation. Is there any question or any discussion? Aaron, please.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kong.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Chair Nelson.
Absolutely yes. And I am very, very proud of this team and what you have just provided for our military. Before I use this gavel, I do want to say we all know, because we've been there, we've heard these individuals who don't have jobs, 50% of them didn't. We also know that after Title 10 expires, they don't even have medical insurance. And for those that need a little subsistence while they try to get in a job training program or in college, need help. And I thank you on their behalf, and I'm proud that House Bill 2602, as amended, has passed. I'm going to open a work session now, committee on House Bill 2739.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2739, you heard on the 12th, 1 week ago, directs the Director of the Department of Parks and Recreation to provide nonprofit veterans organizations with funding assistance for construction and restoration of veterans' memorials and public property. And this has no subsequent referral.
Okay. Mr. Wood? Catching up on my paperwork here. Thank you. Mr. Wood, welcome. What is your feeling on House Bill 2739? Can you make this happen for our veterans?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Tim Wood, Director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And first of all, my comments here apply to both 2739 and 2878. It was never my intention to indicate that the department didn't have a role nor was interested in providing or participating in development of memorials for veterans and recognition of their service to the nation, as well as the sacrifices that their families made. My intent in my first letter that I provided to the committee last week was to indicate that we currently have authority to do with what both 2878 and 2739 do. In 2739, we have two grant programs that exist. We have the local grant program and the heritage grant program. And maybe one of the problems or issues here is that veterans just aren't aware of these grant programs, and we can work with, or very much willing to work with, veterans groups through the Department of Veterans Affairs to identify who they might be, and work with them at becoming more familiar with the programs, how they might apply for grants through the programs, and we'll work with them in the development of those projects so that those applications would be competitive. With regard to 2878, if I may...
Excuse me. Let me just also open a work session on 2878, and then you kill two birds with one stone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to 2878, again, we do have the authority under current statute to acquire properties for the purposes of natural, scenic, recreational, as well as cultural and historic purposes for the state, under which certainly the latter two categories would be categories for which acquisition of properties for construction of memorials and so forth would be appropriate. So, again, if I could just clarify, my intention in my last letter was not to indicate that we don't have an interest nor do we want to participate. My intent in my last communication was to let you know that the authority currently exists under programs that are in place and statute that is already in place.
Thank you. Mr. Wood, we did not want to have to bring some very large troops to find you. And so I'm so happy you're here today and alive. The concern, you know, we're very sensitive. As you know, you're a veteran, and I'm sure you are too. So if we misunderstood your communication, well, we ask your forgiveness for our thinking ill of you. And I wonder how we can move forward. Well, how much money in grants do we have available?
Our local grant program is funded for it's funded at $8 million, or proposed to be funded at $8 million in the 05-07 budget. And the Heritage Grant program is funded at the, I believe, $200,000 level.
And what is the difference between Heritage and local, please?
The local grants program would require nonprofit organizations to partner with a local government sponsor.
Is it matching funds?
And there are matching requirements, and the matching requirements vary depending upon the size of the local government or the local community. It's either 50-50 or 60-40.
And the Heritage Grant?
Oh, I'm sorry. The Heritage Grants program are more appropriate, I guess, or more designed to get to preservation of historic resources and cultural resources. It's probably a more broader application, and probably most veterans' memorial projects would compete better under the Heritage Grants program. However, under the Heritage Grants program, there isn't a local government sponsor required. Nonprofit organizations can apply directly for that.
Okay, questions? No. Representative Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Wood, is it fair to say, as I understand your testimony, you believe you have the authority now? You also expressed the potential concern that some veterans groups may not be aware of the availability of the program. Is it fair to say that the corollary is true as well, that if we were to pass this statute, it would potentially make it more clear that these needs do qualify without imposing any additional burden on the department?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, I believe that's the case. I mean, by passing the statute, it specifies it in statute, but in terms of the impact and how it were administered, you know, sort of those programs are already there. So, it wouldn't have much of an operational context, I guess, within the department, other than the fact that it brings attention to those programs.
So how do you determine what the priorities are? Which ones you maintain?
Madam Chair, you mean with regard to which grants are made?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. In
the
both cases.
The oldest one first? Or?
No, in both cases, I'm sorry, in both cases, the local grants program, all the projects are evaluated by a committee of representatives of local government, county government, parks and recreation district managers, general public at large. And they evaluate the local grants program, the local grants requests, and they compete on their merit amongst all the other projects that come before it. In the Heritage Grants program, I believe those projects are evaluated by a subcommittee of the Oregon Heritage Commission. The Oregon Heritage Commission is the one who makes those grants.
And in this statute, have you ever exercised that power of eminent domain?
Madam Chair, I'm glad you asked that question. The authority for eminent domain has been in our statute for an awful long time. When we were a part of ODOT, before we were a separate agency, that was a part of our, I guess probably a part of our way of doing business. We haven't exercised, since we're now a separate department, we haven't exercised the power of eminent domain since about, I'm not exactly sure, but about 1978.
Do you need that still in here?
Madam Chair, I believe we do. It serves a couple purposes. First of all, our commission has adopted a policy that its land acquisition program is first and foremost based on purchase from willing seller. So that's the way we approach our land acquisition program. However, having eminent domain as a tool is also sometimes beneficial to the willing seller. Because if the seller is willing to make the sale, and between the department and the seller, we just can't come to agreement on price, a friendly condemnation process is one way of establishing what the value of the property is. So it's a useful tool that serves both the buyer and the seller in that case.
Could you do you know what we did in 1978? What memorial or what park or what required this exercising of?
Madam Chair, I can't, but I have Mr. Dave Wright with me, who's our acquisition specialist.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Wright would know. Come up, Mr. Wright.
He better know.
Or heads will roll, right?
Good morning, Chair Nelson, members of the committee. My name is Dave Wright. I'm an assistant director with the State Parks and Recreation Department. The last condemnation that was done was at what we called Ty Valley State Park. Now it's White River Falls State Park. And really it was a condemnation to gain access to a site. We couldn't get
and
through.
And where is this, White River
Park? It's west of the Deschutes River, south of kind of southeast of the Dalles. So
is that right?
Yeah,
that's right.
And it was
for
really
access. What did you have to take over?
Madam Chair, we had to condemn a small piece of property to get from point A to point B because we couldn't get to the site. And now it is a state park because we were able to gain access to it.
And what did that cost us?
I don't recall the amount.
Recall the number of acres?
No, I don't.
Okay. I just wanted to be smarter than anybody.
Madam Chair, excuse me.
All right, go ahead.
One other thing that, you know, a lot of times we'll have landowners request letters from us outlining that we have authority because there is a provision in the tax statutes that if they're sell property under the threat of eminent domain, they have a longer period of time to reinvest before capital gains would take into effect. So we routinely get requests for letters outlining that authority, so it is a useful tool.
Okay. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Out of this $8 million that you said is in the local grant program, or actually that's allocated for 0507, what was allocated in the previous biennium?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, there was $8 million. There's $8 million in the current biennium as well.
Right. Follow up?
Yes.
Could you outline what memorials have received funds from that grant?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, that's a short list because there have none come forward under either the Heritage Grant Program or the local grant program. That's why perhaps if we reach out to veterans groups and make them aware that those programs are available, those would be avenues that would proceed to use.
Would the current memorial being proposed, the Iraqi-Afghanistan memorial, would it be possible for them to access grants from this program?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, I believe so.
Okay. Mr. Barnhart.
Thank you. How oversubscribed are these grant programs?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, we always have more projects than there are dollars available. I can't give you offhand. I can't give you a dollar amount. I could find out what that is.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair, is it twice as much, or three times as much, or slightly more, or I don't need an exact number.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, using that scale, I would say slightly more.
Okay, thank you.
So, how long have we had this $8 million set aside to for memorials?
Madam Chair, the $8 million is set aside for the entire grant program. Memorials would be a piece of that.
Okay,
but
when did it start?
The program was started with the beginning of the lottery funds that came to the department in 98, and it was established in 98 9901 biennium at $5 million, and the 0103 biennium at $5 million, and in this biennium at $8 million, and in the next biennium it's programmed to be $8
million. And so how much money do we have left right now out of this $26 million?
Madam Chair, it's obligated each biennium, so that it's obligated and you know, by the end of the biennium, so it isn't a cumulative. You know, I mean, it's 2 year money, so that the $5 million in 9901 was, you know, for projects in 9901 and so forth. But right now the funds for the current biennium 03-05 have been obligated, and our next our next funding cycle will be for the biennium 07-09. I'm sorry, the next 05-07.
Could we please get a list and how much was given for every, all of these dollars per year, how much, who got it and what it was used for and how much?
Madam Chair, that'd
be possible.
Easily done, yes.
But are you saying, and the Heritage Fund, how much was in that? Was that part of this $8 million?
Madam Chair, no, it's a separate program. I can't go back and tell you the amount.
You can't, but we would appreciate it because we just don't know. I probably don't even know some of these exist. I think it would be great to say, you know, these are ones we've got. I was amazed in our memorial or resolution this week to see how many state parks we'd acquired because of the owner of the Bohemian Lumber, and what a great man to have worked so hard on that. I had no idea, so I would appreciate knowing that. So you're saying that the entire $8 million right now is spent, so if we applied for a grant, if the African Iraqi group applied for a grant, if the Clackamas group, the Canby group, the Florence group all applied for grants, they got to do it by when to get money from the 0507?
Madam Chair, I don't know the date, but I'll find that out.
When applications. So, okay. Other questions? Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We also heard from a group that's proposed a World War II memorial for, I believe it's the Gresham area. Do you know if they've applied for funds?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, I don't believe so. I don't think any grants for memorials have come even to be evaluated. So it's not like they've been there and turned down. I don't think we've seen it.
Would it be possible to find out who's on this? Is it a commission that decides this?
Madam Chair, the Parks and Recreation Commission makes the final decision on what gets funded based on the recommendation of a committee of various representatives.
Well, could we have a list of who's on the Parks and Recreation Commission and then who's the committee on the memorials? And
Madam Chair, certainly.
Please, so maybe we need to get acquainted with them. We need to learn what we don't know what we don't know. So we appreciate it very much. Any other questions? No? Okay, we thank you both very much, and thanks for keeping our parks moving.
Thank you.
Representative Bruin, I'll accept a motion.
On which one, Madam Chair?
House Bill 2739.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2739 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bruin has moved House Bill 2739 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any questions? Any discussion? Aaron?
Representative
Farr. Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative
Cox. Aye.
Representative Barker.
Aye.
Representative
Bolt.
Yes.
Representative
Brown.
Aye.
And Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 2739, having received a unanimous vote in favor of it, is now passed. Representative Hunt. I'll accept a motion for House Bill 2878.
Madam Chair, in light of the testimony that we just received, am I correct that the Dash 1 amendments only dealt with the eminent domain issue?
Madam Chair, yes, the Dash 1 amendment removes Parks and Recreation Commission's eminent domain authority. That's all it does.
So, Madam Chair, since you and I think, had shared that original concern about the eminent domain, my concerns have been answered, and that have yours as well?
No, but but I will support you in your motion.
Okay. Madam Chair, then I would move House Bill 2878 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hunt has moved House Bill 2878 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do you have any questions, discussion? Aaron, please.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kong.
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Brewer.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Thank you, committee members. House Bill 2878 has passed on to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, it would be appropriate to appoint carriers for these two.
Thank you very much. I would like to appoint the individuals who just made those motions.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Would you prefer to carry it?
I would prefer to carry my own bill.
Okay.
Which is 2739.
Is that 2739?
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, I forgot about that. Okay. 2739. Representative Boquist will carry that. For Rachel. And Representative Bruin will carry 2878. Oh, that's yours too. You want to carry both of them?
No, Madam Chair.
Oh, Hunt made the motion on that one. Representative Hunt. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
On 2878, and we'll get Representative Bruin in on the next one. Okay, I will now open a work session on House Bill 2138.
Yeah, I think we need a public hearing on this one.
On 2138?
Yeah, Madam Chair, we have not heard this bill before. We've heard a couple of bills that are similar to it.
Oh, sorry.
2138.
Well, it's strange that I've got a different agenda. Okay. Sorry about that.
You
got it. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2138.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2138 requires that state or local public employee who is also a member of the National Guard, Reserve, Public Health Service receive full pay while on leave for military training only if training is 15 days or less, and the employee's official orders state that the training is annual training. You have a Dash 1 amendment that clarifies that the 15-day leave benefit for members of the Oregon National Guard and Reserves is for any training, annual or deployment. If I might describe the issue that we've heard previously, it has to do with the 15 days leave that is authorized. In the present statute, it says that these leave is authorized for annual training. The governor's bill, which is 2138, requests clarification that the 15 days leave is limited to only that annual training. The Dash 1 changes it to mean that it is for any kind of training, the annual training or the deployment training. In addition, we have just received a fiscal analysis of this. I'll distribute that.
Thank you. I'll call Colonel Mike Caldwell. Thank you.
Good
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. I haven't had an opportunity to see the fiscal yet. I think the your summary by your administrator is quite accurate. We ask that a bill be introduced. There has been a good deal of confusion amongst state agencies, county governments, city governments, who interpreting the current legislation. The term annual training is a term of art that is used, I think, in the context of our traditional role, Guard and Reservists doing 2 days a month training, 2 weeks, sometime during the year. And that was designed, I think, probably back in the 50s or post-World War II, to allow governmental workers that additional leave as a benefit. Confusion has arisen because of the different types of additional training Guard or Reservists can use in today's modern post-Cold War era. So given those challenges, many personnel managers became extremely distraught over different kinds and types of orders that a Guard or Reservist would produce to their employee or to try to achieve these 15 days. Our original intent was to clarify it and say annual training only. I think in today's environment makes a good deal of sense, and the amendments that are proposed, I think, make a good deal of sense, that in many instances, depending on the color of money, if you will, that comes from the Department of Defense, whether it's annual training, whether it's active duty special work training, or pre-deployment pots of money training, annual training being a pot of money, basically, is how you pay these soldiers and sailors and seamen and Marines, reservists. So it probably makes a good deal of sense, like I said, to just take that term of art out and say we're going to give 15 days of leave period, as long as it's in active duty training, which it typically is, or if even if it's active duty training, what do we care? I guess the real issue in my mind is, the intent is to let these people do that training without being charged on their leave basis. You heard testimony on, I think it was on this bill, or maybe there's a couple other bills that are similar, as the administrator has indicated, from Mary Botkin earlier in the session, from the AFSCME, and I know that's their intent, is to try to relieve the stress on the individual and make, basically one size fits all and get out of the terms of art. So we're completely content with that. I don't see any issue from our behalf, and I'm just scanning the fiscal.
Well, here, I'll just, for the benefit of those listening in, what the Department of Administrative Services has stated, that there were 831 state employees on military leave without pay between July and the end of March 05. These persons could be eligible for an additional 88 hours of paid military leave each biennium.
Right.
This is based on 8 hours of pay per 11 of the 15 calendar days that are working days. So that department has calculated the average hourly wage of these 831 state employees to be $17, which excludes other payroll expenses. So based on this historic information, a potential fiscal impact could be as high as $1.24 million. And, of course, actual costs would vary depending upon the number of persons on military leave and the inclusion of other payroll expenses for each employee. And this does not, this estimate does not include county, municipality, or other political subdivision employees, which could also experience some type of fiscal impact.
In my response to that is that's entirely accurate. I wouldn't question their numbers. I would say, however, that I don't think any of us know whether or not their order said annual training of those 831 state employees, or in lieu of annual training, which is what we've advised managers to allow their employees this leave. So it could be as little as zero. So I think you got from zero to 1.24 million is your area in here. I don't think you know unless you go down and say how many of those 831 were actually annual training on annual training. They may be on military leave. That's how you describe it on your time card. But if the orders say annual training, then they wouldn't be in that calculation because the law currently allows them to take those 88 hours. So again, smart managers or smart commanders, and we've advised other reserve units to put those terms in there if that's in fact what's going to happen. And typically what will happen is somebody will be deployed. For instance, the 3rd Battalion, 116th Cavalry, who is now in Iraq. Their first 2 weeks of deployment before they went on Title 10 orders were annual training orders. And the reason they were annual training orders is because there was a pot of money that was available to pay them for that 2 weeks. So that money got used up. And then they had another set of orders that came in 2 weeks later, 15 days later, that said, now you're on pre-deployment orders. So it's basically an accounting mechanism that we use in the military department and throughout the Department of Defense to utilize dollars that are available to pay soldiers to do the job. So the question really becomes, is the policy of the state of Oregon to allow 15 days or 11 days paid leave for military duty? And if it is, then we're on the right track with this amendment. If it's not, and we want to say it's only for annual training in the traditional World War or post-World War II mode, then we stay with what we got.
So if an individual, Sears is a good example, I think, or something like that, is working for Sears.
Yes, ma'am.
And they're called to drill or have this two-week annual training, and Sears continues to pay them, would you also pay them?
Madam Chairman, in that scenario, yes. If their employer, and several private employers have done that, they've allowed leave for certain types of duty for certain periods of time. If they receive a check from their employer, that's between them and their employer. We still pay them when they come on duty, when they get a set of orders. We still pay them, which is, again, I don't know what the genesis and the history of the legislative history is of this part of the statute, but it's been, as long as I've been in, and that's 35 years, that governmental entities in the state of Oregon, city, county, special districts in the state, have allowed people who are in the Guard or Reserve to have 2 weeks of leave over and above their accruals that they would normally get if they have been an employee for 6 months. And that's what this bill does, is clarifies that.
Okay. Any other questions of Deputy Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is your interpretation, Colonel Caldwell, consistent with legislative fiscal office that the 15 days is 15 calendar days?
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Hunt. This has been the state's interpretation since I've been working for the state in 17 years. And again, I think it goes back to the notion of the original intent was to allow 2 weeks back-to-back for employees. Annual training is a 15-day order. That's where the 15 days, I'm sure, came from. So you're on annual training 15 days annually, whether you're a guard or reservist. So my hunch is that's where it came from. Now, we've had arguments with employees. We've had arguments with different labor groups saying, I get 15 days, so I can take 5 this week, 5 next week, and 5 the third week. And the interpretation by Department of Administrative Services, which I believe is correct, I might add, is the intent was to give 15 consecutive days of leave, which 10 of those are work days. In this case, they actually gave an 11th one. I guess a lot of times annual training starts on a Friday. Mm-hmm. It starts on Friday night, and it goes to the next 15 days later.
Okay, other questions?
Question, Madam.
Representative Focus.
Colonel Carl, would you look at amendment, reference your present discussion, Amendment 1, line 9 through 13, specifically says a person shall receive pay for up to 15 days of leave per year on Amendment 1. In your interpretation, would that would mean that the $1.4 million on the fiscal would be low since it only covers 11 of 15 days? Does that sound correct? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, the way I read this, 8 hours.
Okay, Madam Chair, the fiscal was done on the main bill and not on the amendment. The amendment does, in fact, say 15 days of pay,
yeah,
not 11 for the fiscal.
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, I guess my interpretation, if I was, again, I guess I have to go get my law degree from the Juarez School of Medicine and Upholstery here, so you have to bear with my ability. But I would interpret that as a person shall receive pay for up to. In other words, you can't exceed that. But the interpretation is clearly 88 hours or 11 workdays. But I think you bring up a good point, a valid point. And perhaps that should be, council should probably take a look at that and make that determination, because the state's policy has been clear. Yeah, 88 hours, period, 11 workdays out of 15. And that's assuming that you get, again, continuous leave over two weekends.
Any other questions? Good point, Representative Boquist. So if it's okay with you, Colonel Caldwell, we'll correct that.
Madam Chair, you
bring it back.
Certainly welcome.
Because I know it is needed and it's the right thing to do, and it's time we did the right thing here.
I do believe it would help a lot of managers clarify this particular subject, and it's certainly been a big issue with all the deployments we've had. I think every HR manager in the state and local government struggled with that interpretation of that particular statute.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session then on House Bill 213, or the public hearing on House Bill 2138. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2795.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2795 appropriates a blank amount of general funds to build a memorial to Oregon military personnel killed in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. You have the Dash 1 amendment, which appropriates $100,000 to help build the memorial. Madam Chair, I might also mention that this does have a subsequent referral through Ways and Means.
As soon as I find my amendment, I'll continue here. Thank you. Sorry about that. Okay. And public testimony on.
Here in the work session, I don't know if anyone.
Not,
you can call anyone
up. We don't have anyone here to testify. I believe we did have an individual who has brought forth a new illustration of the Afghan Iraqi Freedom Memorial, so that you all may see it. We're most appreciative.
Can we just share these? We'll make this part of the record. We'll make copies afterwards, okay, if that's all right, unless you'd like me to make copies for each of the members now.
Thank you. No, that's great. Okay. Is there any discussion necessary today, Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2795.
Representative Boquist has moved the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2795. Is there any discussion? Question? If not, the Dash 1 is adopted. Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, I move the House Bill 2795 as amended, with a due pass recommendation, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2795, inclusive of the Dash 1 amendment, to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Questions? Aaron.
Representative
Thompson. Aye.
Representative Martin.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. And committee, I just want to tell you that I am so grateful that our troops and the families of our men and women who served so valiantly over in Iraq and Afghanistan will not have to wait 60 years. I think that's what our veterans from World War II have taught us, that that is something we should not do, that these men and women and their families need a place to go to be able to heal from the battle scars and also to appreciate and remember those who gave the ultimate sacrifice, as well as those who served so heroically. So on behalf of all of our troops, our reserves, our airmen, our soldiers who served and their families, I'm grateful and thank you very much. Work session is closed. Dr.
Depending on what the chair says.
Stembridge, I think that
blame
was.
It on me.
Yes, sir. I'll be sure and be sure the audience knows the protocol in the future. I'm going to have open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 13.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 13 urges the President of the United States and Congress to exempt veteran disability and pension income from federal income taxation.
Yes, thank you, committee members. I'll just speak to this myself. I'll once again bring to the point that if you're working for a private business, you retire, and there's an impending workers' comp claim, they do not take it out of your retirement income. So I think this is an atrocity that this continues to happen and that it plagues our veterans.
This is an exemption.
This is a tax.
She'll do the other one.
Oh, sorry. I'm on the wrong one. Beg your pardon. Sorry. I'll save it for the next one. Okay. Mr. McDonald.
Are we in a work session? Or
public hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. I'd just like to point out that disability payments that we receive from the VA are not taxable, and we do not pay tax on them.
Are you in favor of this House Joint Memorial?
Yes, ma'am, but I think it doesn't make sense to say that President Congress exempt veteran disability from federal taxes since it's already is exempt.
Is the pension income exempt?
Ma'am, I couldn't hear you.
Is the pension income exempt?
No, ma'am. Pension income is not exempt, but the disability payment is exempt.
Okay. Thank you so much. Anyone else wish to testify? Director Willis? So, as this bill reads, it needs an adjustment. And I will work on that. Thank you very much, Mr. McDonald. I'll close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 13. Open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 25.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 25 urges Congress to eliminate the subtraction of veteran disability payments from veteran pension payments.
Thank you. All right. Does everybody recall my original testimony in behalf of this bill? I don't have to say it again, but I hope we can, really support this. This has been around forever. I cannot count how many times I've seen this as a veterans advocate and how many times I've call Congress and said, what on earth? Where did this stupid, issue come from? I mean, why would we do this, to our veterans? There's no logic. So I'm just going to pray, and I'm going to pray like work doesn't count and work like prayer doesn't count. And let's see if we can make this happen. Representative Kahn.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, ma'am.
Do you have any objection to this House Joint Memorial 13?
Absolutely not.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Boquist, do you?
No, Madam Chair.
Representative Barnhart?
So far, so good.
Representative Bruin?
I don't have an objection, but I think we have an omission, and the omission comes to my mind after our meeting, I think it was in Ashland, Saturday morning, the fact that we are, and I don't want to open a Pandora's box, but that we're excluding the Merchant Marine. And there were some comments made in that regard this weekend.
You're right. So if we say Marines, Director Willis, does that include Merchant Marines?
No. Madam Chair, it does not.
And since the 1980s, 88 or something like that, we began including them, is that correct?
The World War II United States Merchant Marines are recognized for veterans' benefits after that date. That is correct.
Well, thank you very much for remembering that, Representative Bruin, and we will correct that. Okay, and I'll close the public hearing. We certainly do appreciate those Merchant Marines. Couldn't have made it without them. And I'll close the hearing on House Joint Memorial 25. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 17.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I don't have a summary for those members trying to find the summary that I wrote up for House Joint Memorial 17. You won't find it. Let me just tell you that House Joint Memorial 17 urges Congress to exempt from federal income taxation income received by taxpayer while taxpayer serves in combat zones.
Thank you, Mr. Stembridge. Every day I'm more and more aware that we have placed a tremendous burden on our soldiers, our airmen, and I think this is the most appropriate House Joint Memorial, and I'm pleased this committee has sponsored this bill. Any other discussion? Okay, if not, I'm going to close the House Joint Memorial hearing, public hearing on House. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 17. Tap it. Can I do okay? All right. And is there any other discussion today? Veteran Sullivan.
Madam Chair, while he's coming up, could I just make one very brief comment? I'm very pleased with Representative Groom's remarks about the Joint Memorial concerning the Merchant Marine. My brother went to the Merchant Marine Academy, was commissioned and served in the Merchant Marine, sailing in and out of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. So I'm very pleased to see that you caught that one. I had not.
Good. Hope we didn't miss it anywhere else.
Well, that's why I mentioned the Pandora's box. I think we probably have. But if we went back and looked at some things, we would see that we have. So that would serve as a work committee to go back and see.
That's great. No, that's very good. So if any of you do see it anywhere, let's catch it. I know I visited with some of them at our birthday party over at our Department of Veteran Affairs, and it was just awesome. Mr. Sullivan, please.
Madam Chairman, committee, for the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I represent the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, and I'm here just briefly to make a statement that I received an email from the Disabled American Veterans on the failure of the Senate to go along with an amendment for appropriation supplement of $80 billion. And $2 billion of that would have gone to the veterans' health care. I know that in your docket of bills you have House Joint Memorial 18, and I think it's crucial that it move. I believe that of all the good work that you're doing, the initiation of continual health care paid by the federal government for veterans is astronomically important. I would like to see a handout in the back of the room for contacts for the Congress and senators of the state and make the demand to them that they push this agenda. I again beseech you and the committee that for me, and I think a lot of veterans, this is probably the most important thing, to move our federal counterparts, if you will, on this action. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Sullivan, we want to thank you for support of our veterans and our military. You've been very loyal in being at these committee hearings, and I've always appreciated that. You know, it isn't a partisan issue, as we've talked, and like kids, they're not a partisan issue, education. But I wanted to tell you some good news. On my way to work this morning, before the state police stopped me to see if I'd approved their budget.
Madam Chair, did you make a donation? Or is that yet to come?
I heard on the radio that it is being revived, this $2 billion, and I just, you know, by a senator. So I hope we're back on the burner and we will, you know, get serious about what we should have done a long time ago. And it was also, I noticed last night, listen, pretty good for these things, pretty well, and it was on several of the major stations last night, so that helps. So one good thing the press is doing is bringing attention to this fact, and you're right on, and thank you for this. So we need to ride our congressional group and push on this and call them and do everything we can.
Yes, one party comment. If you're going to finance a war, you should finance those that come back and need aid. And I really think it is an absurdity that it is not done annually appropriated. Thank you.
You are so right. Thank you so much. I want to, you know, the reason that we have had such good support, I want to tell you what people do for us that we are not even aware of. Mr. Cluding is here, and he is an Oregon Legislative Affairs representative, and he represents the Western Council of Industrial Workers. And when he heard we were headed to Roseburg, this man on his own contacted people there that he knew who would be interested in our issues, just on his own. And Mr. Cluding, would you stand? We just want to applaud you, because I thought that was incredible. And so for all of those listening and the individuals who, get information about these bills, we appreciate that very much, and we want to serve in all areas of the state. And so any help you can give us in reaching everyone, well, we are most grateful. Director Willis, do you wish to speak?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we've been joined today by a distinguished veteran who was not able to be here and enjoy your recognition of our veterans when the meeting of the committee first began. I'd like to tell you that he is the commander of American Legion Post 11 in Corvallis. He is also wearing today the cover, or they call it actually a chapeau, of the Society of the 40 and 8, which is the American Legion Honor Society. He represents Voyager 727 out of Albany. The Society of the 40 and 8 is named after the boxcar used in World War I in France that could transport 40 men or 8 horses.
Aww.
And so that's how old that society is, and it's been in existence since the end of World War I. This distinguished veteran is James D. Jones. He served in the United States Navy from 1956 until 1978, when he retired as a chief petty officer, including his tours of duty on the ground in Vietnam. He is a hard worker for veterans, and this is his first time that he's been able to visit the committee, and I'm just very proud to introduce him to you. He's in the back of the room here by the door, James Jones.
Thank you. We are so honored to stand, and thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, this is a rare blessing, and we are so grateful. And Mr. Jones, it's because of individuals like you that this great country prevails, and we just cannot begin to tell you how much your service has meant and how grateful we are for all you've done for all of us. Thank you so much. Thank you. And I can't think of a nicer way to end than for us to get to go personally give Mr. Jones a hug. And thank you. And I hope I haven't forgotten anything today. This meeting is adjourned.
Look out.